The message that I have today asks a question. What does the Bible say about nuclear war? For the first time in about 40 years, at least in my recollection, we've started hearing much more about the reality of nuclear war actually happening. Russia is the nation with the most nuclear weapons in its arsenal. It has over 6,000 nuclear warheads that at least the ones that they've disclosed. And considering the active Russian aggression against Ukraine right now, and the very strong rhetoric against the nations, such as those in Europe or even the United States, who dare to even offer help to them, knowing that these weapons are available for them to use is fearsome. In fact, as I mentioned, Russia has over 6,000. The United States has roughly 4,000. There's another several thousand scattered amongst other countries, such as Pakistan and India and China and Israel, France even. There are a lot of nuclear weapons out there. That's the whole point. There's enough to do pretty terrible destruction on the face of the earth. The danger in the world that exists because of nuclear weapons, no matter whose hands they are in, threatens the whole world. And now, why is that? Well, that's because one attack inevitably results in retaliatory attacks until nothing is left on the face of the earth. It's hard not to imagine utter destruction. With one weapon launched, many more are launched, and so on until 10,000 nuclear weapons are all in the air, doing the damage on the face of this earth. And now, of course, Russia has escalated the threat of using its nuclear weapons in not so thinly veiled terms. The reality of a nuclear attack is not so far-fetched these days. Now, we often proclaim in our Standing Watch programs and other material that we present that nuclear war will happen on this earth. We say that pretty dogmatically. We also state that the Bible declares that nuclear war will happen. But of course, the words never appear in the Bible. So how can we say this? How can we say that nuclear war is going to happen on this earth and that the Bible proves it without having those words blatantly there? Obviously, it takes some inference, some deduction to make that possible, and I want to just share a few scriptures today that bring that about. Now, the weapons, of course, that existed during the time of the Bible were extremely primitive by today's standards. Swords and arrows and simple projectiles are what were used then. They didn't even have guns, of course. Chariots are mentioned as tools of war. So where in the Bible does it say that nuclear war will happen? Are we just making this up? Well, let's go ahead and take a look at a few passages that I've selected in the Bible to help us understand just why we are bringing up this point about nuclear war being described as a biblically prophesied event. Turn to Isaiah 13 with me, and I'll begin reading in verse 6, and I'll read through verse 10. Isaiah 13, 6 through 10. Wail, for the day of the Lord is at hand. Let me pause there. That phrase, day of the Lord, refers to a very specific time in prophecy. It refers to the few years leading up to the return of Jesus Christ. And it also includes the time when Jesus Christ is here and he is extinguishing the warfare on the face of this earth. Wherever we read about the day of the Lord, we can refer to that time. So this is the time that Isaiah is writing about here. Wail, for the day of the Lord is at hand. It will come as destruction from the Almighty. Therefore, all hands will be limp, every man's heart will melt, and they will be afraid. every man's heart will melt. Everybody will be afraid. That covers the whole planet. There is no one excluded from that. Continuing, pangs and sorrows will take hold of them. They will be in pain as a woman in childbirth. They will be amazed at one another. Their faces will be like flames. And in the literal translation, it says, their faces will be flames. Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel with both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate. That is the phrase that we are picking up on, laying the land desolate. And he will destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be darkened in its going forth, and the moon will not cause its light to shine. The description that we see here about the utter destruction on the face of the planet, causing everybody's heart to fail with fear, is tremendous in scale. The weapons of warfare that existed in the biblical times do not exist to make that happen. What we know about how nuclear weapons work is that they are extremely destructive. They throw up plumes of debris and terrible nuclear particles into the atmosphere such that light cannot shine through. And to make the land desolate is the point. Now, there are very few things that are capable of making the land desolate. This fact that the people on the earth will be astonished and overcome by fear, that is something very few things are capable of doing. The day of the Lord is that time when that punishment from God will be unleashed. God will allow mankind to unfurl destruction upon one another. In the same way that he used Assyria in his hands to punish the nation of Israel, the same type of thing is going to happen in the future, where nations will be allowed to fight against other nations according to God's will, for the purpose of punishment. The kind of destruction is on a massive scale, as we can see here. The land will be laid desolate, as I made that point. The reason why we make claims about nuclear war being in the Bible, it has to do with these effects. Nothing else man-made is capable of doing this. Let's go to Isaiah 24, and I'd like to read verses 1 through 12. Here we will read more about desolation. Isaiah 24 and verse 1. Behold, the Lord makes the earth empty and makes it waste, distorts its surface and scatters abroad its inhabitants. And it shall be as with the people, so with the priest, as with the servant, so with his master, as with the maid, so with her mistress, as with the buyer, so with the seller, as with the lender, so with the borrower, as with the creditor, so with the debtor. The land shall be entirely emptied and utterly plundered. For the Lord has spoken this word. We can see here that nobody, by the state of their credentials, their power, their wealth, is capable of saving themselves. Continuing, the earth mourns and fades away. The world languishes and fades away. The haughty people of the earth languish. The earth is also defiled under its inhabitants, because they have transgressed the laws, changed the ordinance, broken the everlasting punishment. There we have the cause of this punishment. Therefore, the curse has devoured the earth, and those who dwell in it are desolate. Therefore, the inhabitants of the earth are burned, and few men are left. What weapons do we know of that are capable of causing that type of destruction, causing the earth to be burnt? Continuing, the new wine fails, the vine languishes, all the merry-hearted sigh, the mirth of the tambourine ceases, the noise of the jubilant ends, the joy of the harp ceases. They shall not drink wine with a song. Strong drink is bitter to those who drink it. The city of confusion is broken down. Every house is shut up so that none may go in. There is a cry for wine in the streets. All joy is darkened. The mirth of the land is gone. In the city, desolation is left, and the gate is stricken with destruction. Terrible, terrible times. This description clearly affects everyone on the face of the earth, indiscriminately. The reason has to do with the disobedience to God. You and I, brethren, have been very blessed to understand the truth, to understand obedience, to put it into our hearts and to love it. And that offers us the promise of protection. That is the only way to find protection, as we'll see. People today in society do not have the fear of God, and there will be punishment for that, sadly. Desolation and destruction will be the only way to get people's attention. The land entirely will be emptied and utterly destroyed. People and the earth will be burned, leaving very few remaining. I'd like to go to Isaiah 34, read verses 8 through 10. Isaiah 34 and verse 8, "For it is the day of the Lord's vengeance, the year of recompense for the cause of Zion. Its streams shall be turned to pitch," a thick, black, sticky pitch, "and its dust into brimstone, and its land shall become burning pitch. It shall not be quenched night or day. Its smoke shall ascend forever. From generation to generation, it shall lie waste. No one shall pass through it forever and ever." What type of destruction is so bad that it burns the surface of the earth so that it is black as pitch and nobody wants to come near it? Those are the effects of nuclear war. This description of the scorched land describes that destruction on a massive scale. The effects are clear if we read them. But of course, we need to consider the cause. It is God's vengeance upon the disobedient that causes that destruction to take place. We talk about nuclear war because these are the only kinds of man-made weapons today that are capable of these effects. We know that nations are going to rise up against other nations. The Bible doesn't use exact language of nuclear war, but the effects are very clear. We know that people will be fighting. We know that for a fact. We know that war will escalate to the point that it threatens the extinction of the world. Where do you and I come in? Let's go to Matthew 24 and read verses 21 and 22. Matthew 24 and verse 21. "For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened." Brethren, that is you and me. For our sake, these days will be shortened, so that there will be a remnant of life that can begin ruling with Jesus Christ following his return. This destruction will not last forever. Jesus Christ will put an end to this fighting. This time of tribulation will ensue preceding the return of Jesus Christ. That fighting between people will threaten to cause life to become extinct. Those 12,000 nuclear weapons will easily extinguish life if they are launched. But Jesus Christ will return at the time when there is such great fighting that he will put an end to it. And that we can be thankful for. For my final scripture, I'd like to end on a positive note. Certainly this time is terrible to consider, but we need to be aware of it. Turning to Psalm 46, I'd like to read verses 8 and 9. Psalm 46 and verse 8, Come, behold the works of the Lord. Who has made desolations in the earth? He makes wars cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and cuts the spear in two. He burns the chariot in fire. These times will come to an end, but it is going to take the return of Jesus Christ to do that. It really is terrifying to consider the wars that will affect the people throughout the world. The only way to find any kind of protection in that time is from God, through obedience to Him. For the elect's sake, that time, that terrible tribulation, will be cut short. And following that time, when Jesus Christ does return to establish His government, it will usher in a time of righteousness, a time of renewal on this planet that is so corrupt. It is a time, as we know, that Satan will be bound for 1,000 years, so he won't be able to influence the type of contention and violence that man has so put into his heart, twisted his conscience. Jesus Christ will bring his perfect leadership, and it will bring that millennial time period to this earth to fix all of that corruption that has engulfed the face of the planet since the beginning of man. Nuclear weapons will be destroyed. They will no longer be able to harm people. The violence on the face of the earth will come to an end. This is what gives us hope. This is what we look forward to.